Welcome to the Congressional Awards Foundation podcast, Elevating DC Youth, a collaboration between the Office of Cable Television, Film, Music, and Entertainment, and the Congressional Award Foundation. This podcast is intended to help guide DC students through the opportunities the Congressional Award Program offers and provide information on how to explore the Congressional Award Program's pathways to career goals.
Hello, and welcome to the Congressional Award Podcast, Elevating DC Youth. I'm Ayala Carter from Dean Wood Radio and one of your co-hosts today.
Hi, I'm Eric Curry III from Dean Wood Radio Broadcast, and I'll be your other co-host for this podcast.
Here at Deanwood, we focus on media and journalism and uplifting DC youth around the city. And we have creative direction directed by Salih Williams. And I am an upcoming sophomore in college.
I am an upcoming freshman in college. And at Deanwood, we are privileged with the opportunity to interview amazing people such as yourself, Ms. Rutter, Allison Seymour, Donnie Simpson, Paxton Baker, of course. And we're just young kids who want to be journalists and who really want to take this media thing to the next level.
Now let's meet our guest, Deborah Rutter. Deborah Rutter has emerged as one of the nation's most adroit leaders in the arts, combining artistic daring, inclusivity, and responsiveness to the needs of the community. Ms. Rutter began as president of the John F. Kennedy Center for the Performing Arts on September 1st, 2014, and serves as a curator for the Kennedy Center's Presidential Memorial and artistic and administrative director of the world's busiest performing arts center. Established as a living memorial by Act of Congress in 1964, the Kennedy Center honors the 35th president, advancing his vision of excellence and diversity in the arts. In an ever-expanding celebration of his legacy, the center presents theater, contemporary dance, ballet, vocal music, chamber music, hip-hop, comedy, international arts, and jazz, alongside dynamic seasons with the Kennedy Center's world-class affiliates, the National Symphony Orchestra and Washington National Opera. As the work of the Living Memorial is never finished, Rutter is advancing the center's commitment to the 21st century programming. In her first year at the Kennedy Center, Rutter broke ground on a transformative arts facility, The Reach, which provides flexible indoor and outdoor performance space to nurture art, community innovation, arts education, and informal encounters between arts, artists, and public. Designed by renowned architect Stephen Hall, The Reach graces the southern end and the campus connects the Kennedy Center to the popular pedestrian bicycle train along the Potomac River.
Today, Ms. Rutter is reshaping Kennedy Center offerings to include more artist-led programming while challenging people across the industry to reimagine creative expression through the lens of cross-disciplinary collaborations. In 2018, she launched the Cutting Edge Festival of Contemporary Culture, Direct Current, an annual series spotlighting new and interdisciplinary art. An adept team builder, Rutter is drawing some of the world's most visionary and iconic artists to the Kennedy Center's creative team, including cellist Yo-Yo Ma, soprano Renee Fleming, singer-songwriter Ben Folds, and DJ and composer Mason Bates, as well as the center's first artistic director of hip-hop culture, Q-Tip. Rutter scored a coup for the NSO, according to the Washington Post, Annie Midget, by landing the prominent Italian conductor, sorry for pronunciation, Gianandrea Nozeda, thank you, as the National Symphony's seventh music director. Deborah Rutter is a graduate from Stanford University and holds an MBA from the University of Southern California. She was born in Pennsylvania and grew up in the Los Angeles area. She studied piano and violin from an early age and played in orchestras throughout her student days. Today's topic is career growth and sustainability practices from President's Perspective with Deborah Rutter. Thank you for joining us today.
Well, thank you, Eric, and thank you, Yanni. Just what I needed at 4:15 on a Thursday afternoon, a little bit of an ego brush. So thank you so much for that. One thing that is very true is that sometimes you have a high week and sometimes you have highs and low weeks. And so seeing you two and being in conversation with you is definitely a high. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, so my first question is, I know that you're originally born from Pennsylvania, but then you were also raised in LA. So do you think that you being from or just being surrounded by like really big cities that are like artistically driven, do you think that helped aided you into like community and arts and helping the youth in the Kennedy Center?
You know, that's a really interesting question. I never, ever have thought about it as big city per se. Mm-hmm. And in fact, I'm very much an outdoors person. And so I do live in cities, but I always need to live in places that are beautiful and interesting and allow me to have outdoor time. So I don't think of it as the city per se. Mm-hmm. But I do believe that having an environment that is encouraging around participation in the arts. So I was very, very fortunate because I had art in the school day. And most importantly, my third grade teacher opened a cabinet one day and said, which instrument will you play? Not would you like to play, but will you play? Like this was a part of the school day. And I believe that choosing the violin that day is what leads me to sit in the chair and have the job that I have today, because it was a way that I could find myself. And it could be a way that I identified how I fit in with other people. And everybody has that opportunity. They have that moment where they say, this is what I really love to do. And over time, I really discovered that music and participation in music, which led me to a curiosity about all the arts, was what was really driving, was central to my identity. So yes, it's easier, particularly before there was such a the technology that we have now that allows us to be able to participate in all kinds of art all the time. Back when I was a kid, it helped to be in a city. It helped to be in a city where you could take a bus or see it through school. And so, yes, to some degree, being in a city was important to my being able to really explore the art that I really fell in love with. But I don't think it's because I love the city. It's because the city is where there was so much activity going on.
Thank you.
So I like that you mentioned when you were younger and kind of how you fell in love with the art. My question is, how much do you think it's important for the youth to be in tune with the arts and to be engaged with their creative side?
Eric, that is something that I've been doing a lot of thinking and talking about recently. You know, most of the time, an individual engages with an artistic experience for fun, because there's a celebration, because you're out having an experience with a friend or a family. And we often forget about the totality of the experience until we walk away. And if we take the time to reflect on it, we realize that engaging in some sort of experience that is cultural, and I am saying cultural because art comes in so many different types of forms, including fashion and food and visual art and music and dance and theater and all of that. In my career, I've really done a lot of thinking and conversation about the fact that to have a cultural moment, whether it is at a museum by yourself in front of a museum or a gallery, or even seeing art on a wall in a restaurant, mm-hmm. you actually have a moment that takes you away from your present.
Right.
When you go and you go to a concert, no matter what the concert is, I mean, I've been to a lot of concerts that I suspect you would be surprised that I was at. but I was young once, and I went to lots and lots and lots of concerts. Going and sharing the experience of a live performance, no matter what it is, builds a relationship with the other people that you're in the room with, whether it's spoken or unspoken, and it takes you to another place. I often, as you can imagine, because of my work, I go to shows a lot. I sit in concerts. I go see. Tonight, I'm going to see two. For me, going into a performance gives me an opportunity for a moment of quiet, of personal quiet, and it allows me to go inside myself just a little bit. Mm-hmm. Even if it's loud and exciting music, even if I want to stand up and dance to the music, it gives me a moment that is a reflection. It takes me inside myself. But I'm also sharing it with other people. I'm actually going to these two performances alone, but I will share it with 2,000 people in one theater and 1,000 people in another theater. So I'm going, you know, my husband can't come tonight. I'm going alone. But the idea is that it builds a relationship with the other people. And I am a big believer that the act of community, by sharing the time and the space of an artistic experience, builds empathy. Certainly, we know that by participating, actually creating it and participating in the dance or an artistic program also builds creativity and collaboration between people, and it gives you an opportunity to experiment. So when I was a young person, I played a lot of music with others, and it helped me understand how I could work collaboratively with them. I was in a, I remember being in a play when I was a young person. I was just terrible. I was a horrible actor, but I can remember it still, right? And I remember the act of creating the play with my friends. And I don't think that we can underestimate the importance of collaboration, building empathy, building understanding. If I share with you music that I love, you share with me music that you love. I get to know you better. And that happens all the time. You're doing it all the time with your friends. You're saying, hey, did you hear this?
Right.
And that is an important part of humanity. Artists are merely showing us through their eyes and their art who we are as people. And then we reflect on that ourselves. So I think it's really, really important for young people to provide space, make space, look for space, to have cultural activities, even if it's alone. But often better is when you share it with somebody else.
Thank you.
My next question is, I know in 2018, you launched Direct Current, an annual festival for contemporary culture. And I would like to know a little bit of your process in creating this festival and, you know, why and, you know, how did you feel after you seen the success of it coming to?
So I was very fortunate from the very earliest jobs that I had to work with composers who are writing new work, which led to being able to also work with choreographers and directors who are creating new work. And one of the things that the Kennedy Center does very, very well that I inherited was we find the best of the world and we bring it to the Kennedy Center. And that's how you get performances of big name artists and big name shows. But sometimes you also need to invite artists whose work are still being developed or perhaps a little bit more avant-garde or experimental, that the work that is still emerging and has not yet become the big name. And so we wanted to create a space and a time at the center for really offering the space to do that work, whether it's a stage, a multidisciplinary type of stage, and to be able to invite some of the more progressive artists to experiment and share it in Washington. Now, the big cities that are known for doing this more have been around and have established entities that have done that work. And the Kennedy Center has not been known for doing the more progressive contemporary work. And by this, we really mean the works that are perhaps lesser known than the big names. So like we had Wicked here recently. Now, this is the play that's still being developed or is written on a very, you know, perhaps narrower, less populist topic.
Right.
And so this was about supporting, going back to why I described composers, this was about supporting living artists who are creating brand new work today that has not really yet met the mainstream. And I feel like at the National Cultural Center that, yes, we present the biggest names, the most popular ensembles or theater works, but also to support the artists who are just beginning to find their way and to present some of that more cutting edge work.
Thank you.
So you mentioned earlier how live performers can bring a room together and how, you know, there's no experience. You're about to go to two concerts by yourself, but you're not really by yourself because you're about to share an experience with almost 3,000 people. So my question to you is, how do you think COVID-19 affected how we interact, not just with art, but also with just mankind moving forward in those artistic settings?
Well, I will tell you that probably in the summer of 2020, I was going through a change that many of us were going through, which was getting a little bit more comfortable being at home all the time, getting more comfortable with not having the kind of social interaction in person as we used to. And that was also a time of reflection and maybe reconsideration of how I spend my time. There was some joy in being stuck at home with just your family and your pets. But I will tell you that the first time that we were able to have a live performance at the center was when the mayor said you can have 50 people in a room as long as they're spread far apart from one another. And we did immediately. Like the first moment we could, we did that. And it was a concert. And it was with three musicians playing instruments and two singers. And then that meant, and with the stage crew and the ushers, that meant we could only have about 25 or 30 other people in the space. We did it on the Opera House stage. It's a huge, huge space. I was sitting really far away from another person. And you know what? It was so exciting. I remember that date, that performance so vividly because of it wasn't the excitement of you know, we're back, because of course we came back for a little while and then we closed down again. But the idea that I was experiencing these two singers singing beautiful stuff we know and we all wanted to sing along with them. But the point was I was sharing it with other people. So what's really been interesting since, you know, the fall of 20, which is when that concert was that I just described, to today, we've gone through lots of, it's a real roller coaster, ups and downs, some of them steep, some of them less so. But what is really true is that we all carry a little bit of anxiety about, will I get sick by being around these other people? Now, that actually is not new. I mean, we've all gone to concerts and who knows where we got the, you know, our head cold, but we might have gotten sick from somebody. Now we have a little bit higher sensitivity to it, right? But what has happened is the wave that started out very slowly has built and built and built momentum so that the number of people who are coming to performances has really reached an extraordinary level. And we are feeling great about it. We have more people at this point in this season than we did in the year prior to the pandemic. And that was a really banner year for the Kennedy Center. So people are coming back. People are coming back in different ways. And there is a lot of enthusiasm for being here. You know, we can all hear anything or see anything that we're interested in at home. You can get it on a screen anywhere, right? You can get it through podcasts. You can get it anywhere. The difference is when you are sitting in a room with other people, it feels different. And the live performance from the stage is always more exciting than what you get digitally. And so what's been really rewarding is to get to the place where we are now, where people are saying, yes, I do want to come back and be in a theater with other people. And it feels great. And I don't want to miss it. And I think that's true for all of us. I mean, I think we have different experiences. You know, during the Zooms, we would have dinner with a friend and we'd Zoom together and eat. But sitting together and eating, much more fun.
Thank you.
So I know that you are the first woman to serve as the head of the performing arts organization. So I would like to know a little bit more about, you know, what it's like, or just what are your struggles with going every day into the work field, especially being a woman. You know, it is a little bit harder to break barriers. So can you tell me a little bit more about like your experience?
You know, I have had evolving sort of philosophy about this. Okay. My father was the first feminist in my life. Mm-hmm. And he was basically the person who said, if there's something you want to do, you should not believe there's any barrier to being to going and doing it. Mm-hmm. So attitude is everything. I didn't know that he wasn't right. I didn't have that approach. So I was very fortunate that I had not just my father, my mother was supportive as well, let's be clear. But my father was the one who basically said, if you want to do something, just go do it. Mm-hmm. And take that attitude. Now, I think that for me, I have married that attitude with a pretty strong work ethic and a belief that if I said I'm going to do something, I'm going to do it, which is what drives me every day. And it is what keeps me going when I might get discouraged because I feel like I was either put down or not taken as seriously or not given an opportunity where another person was. What I've come to understand at this point in my life and career is that sometimes those are quite literal, and sometimes those are things that I perceive to have happened but were not intentionally sent. And so what I have really tried to work hard for myself is to own what I own. And if somebody else does something that is not helpful to me, I move on past that and realize that I'm going to have to avoid that kind of interaction. Now, that's easier said than done, let's be clear. But the drive to actually be successful is based on what is at the foundation of your ambition. I am not ambitious about being the first woman anything. I'm not ambitious for, I never in a million years would have dreamt that I'd be sitting here. But I'm very ambitious for the cause of the role of the arts in our world. And I'm very ambitious for my institutions. I came to the Kennedy Center because I thought, okay, I care about arts education for every child in the school day. I care about the future of the arts in our country. I'm going to go to Washington, D.C. and be at the center of where these decisions get made. I don't know that I've been able to do that, but that's why I'm here. Not because I said to myself, oh, the pinnacle of being an arts administrator is by being the president of the Kennedy Center. My ambition drives, it is driven by my belief in the work that I'm doing. And that is what motivates me every day. That said, the other piece of what motivates me every day is living a life that is worthy and worthy of being in relationship to other people. And so I was a mom, but I was an old mom. That was what life dealt me. I didn't have my daughter until I was after 41. But it was really important to have that child. It was important to be in relationship with her father and my family. And I never gave up the dual part, i.e. being family and being successful in my work. And I think, frankly, that it was my really deep desire to be able to have a worthy life in both of those areas that helped me make decisions that were not always easy to make between how and when I did my work. And I feel, you know, the jury, I suppose, is still out, but those are the decisions I took. I don't know if being a woman made it harder or easier. I feel fortunate that I was doing this at this point in the history of America and that we're in America. And I recognize fully that I have had some opportunities that not everybody has been able to experience and appreciate. And that's why for me today, equity is such a driving factor, because I know I've had opportunity and I want others to have that as well.
Thank you.
Deborah Rutter, thank you so much for being a guest on our show today.
It's my pleasure. It was great to be in conversation with you, and both of you, my best.
Thank you.
And thanks to everyone listening to the Congressional War Podcast, Elevating DCU. I'm Ayama Carter.
And I'm Eric Curry III. Have a great day.
You've been listening to the Congressional Awards Foundation podcast, Elevating DC Youth. The Congressional Awards Foundation podcast, Elevating DC Youth, is a collaboration between the Office of Cable Television, Film, Music, and Entertainment and the Congressional Award Foundation. For more information about the Congressional Award Foundation, visit congressionalaward.org.